Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
This podcast was recorded Thursday, August 7th at 11:21 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like Governor DeWine, who wants to ban prop bets on things like strikeouts, will try to ban Ohioans from betting on the Browns to win. That certainly will keep more money in Ohioans' pockets. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who don't even try to hide raw political ambitions behind their policy stances. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, the raw politics of redistricting produces our Snollygoster of the Week award. I bet you can guess who that goes to. But first, a roundtable discussion about two big stories in Ohio this week. More signs that Intel's factory in central Ohio is in serious trouble, somewhat serious trouble at least, and gerrymandering, which used to be a once every 10-year political event, but no more. The drama over legislative district mapmaking is not limited to Texas, where Republicans and Democrats are in that standoff over an effort to redraw lines in that state. Once again, Ohio lawmakers are drawing legislative districts. This time, they will draw congressional maps. They will slice the state into 15 districts, and those maps could decide which party controls Congress after the 2026 election. Ohio now has 10 Republican congresspeople and 5 Democrats. They're representing the state in Congress. President Trump wants Ohio to join states like Texas in drawing maps that will favor Republicans so the party can maintain its narrow majority in Congress that it holds now. To discuss both topics, we turn to a panel of veteran political observers here in Ohio, Republican strategist Mark Weaver, OSU political scientist Herb Asher, and political reporter Jake Zuckerman from Signal Statewide. Jake Zuckerman, the Texas maps were very aggressive, trying to favor Republicans in theory. Will Ohio Republicans try to do the same thing? What's the word?
Well, there was a headline out a few weeks ago in Punch Bowl News where I believe the quote was something of how cruel do Republicans want to be. I can't independently verify that, but I think that kind of thing is in the air right now. And when you look at what Texas just did, Texas's map would flip 5 current Democrat seats to likely Republican seats. And Democratic states of California and New York have immediately responded and indicated they're going to do the same thing for Democratic candidates. So I think it's pretty clear this is becoming a pretty bare-knuckle, pretty plainly partisan brawl.
Mark, there's 5 Democrats now. Realistically, how many seats could Republicans pick up if they drew more favorable maps to them?
The high end is 13. 12 is more likely. Marcy Kaptur in the northwest part of the state has been well out of step with her constituency for the last few cycles. Amelia Sykes in the greater Akron area is also fairly extreme on the left. Both of them are at risk. A lot of this will depend on what kind of year the Republicans have in 2026. Normally, we would see the party that's in the White House to suffer losses in the House races. But Donald Trump is on a tear of great achievements. If the economy continues to be strong, it might be a much more mild effect in 2026.
Herb, that's the names you hear most often. Kaptur,
yes.
Sykes.
Yes.
Marcy Kaptur, she had a narrow win last time. But she's
so
still
Sykes.
Pretty popular, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those are the two. But I think, you know, one question will be, will the leadership and the Republican leadership in the House and the Senate have the appetite to do this? Because it'll be a very messy process. It'll go through lots of stages and all of that. And they could decide that we don't need to do this. I mean, even though they're being pressured by the White House, but they could say, look, we'll just make some modest changes in the districts and leave it the way they are. That's probably very naive on my part, because typically when you have the pen, you want to, in fact, take advantage of it. But it is a very complicated process. The Republicans would win at the end of the process if they decide to go very, very aggressively.
That's because they have supermajorities, and the Supreme Court now has changed since the last time.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. In the last election cycle in the state of New York, the New York legislature, Democratic controlled, ignored changes in the New York Constitution and did, you know, they got very greedy and created a set of districts. And of all things, the Democratic New York State Supreme Court overturned the Democratic legislature. You don't hear that often, and forced them to go back. And it's actually the Democrats failed to pick up three or four seats in New York, and that was the difference between control of the House. And so as people talk about redistricting, that you always talk about midterm elections, the wave, the midterm effect or whatever, but I think we're getting more sensitive. Yeah. That this redistricting can have to determine the outcome.
Will Democrats agree to any, because you could solve this fairly quickly if they could get Democrat buy-in to these maps. Republicans could end this process very quickly. Will they agree, Jake, to any map that has fewer than, gives them a chance in fewer than five races in the state?
Well, I don't want to draw a line in the sand for the Democratic Party, but the Democrats have come around and agreed to these maps in the past. I remember Alison Russo, then the minority leader of the House Democrats, making statements to the effect of, it's going to be this or it's going to be worse. So I think the Democrats are realist. They're real, or real lack of judicial power in the state.
Okay. But we were supposed to have a better system, perhaps, in their successful campaign to defeat last November's redistricting amendment. Some state leaders promised a less partisan way to draw the maps. Governor DeWine was among those pushing Iowa's relatively nonpartisan system of drawing maps.
After we defeat this inherently flawed proposal, I will work with the General Assembly to introduce a resolution in the next session. We'll vet that proposal. There'll be hearings on it. We'll hear from citizens on all sides, and I hope then the resolution to place an initiative on the ballot for voters to approve the way the process should be. I will ask them to pass a version of the Iowa ballot language that's been in effect for this system for about 40 years now.
Jake, any hearings scheduled yet on this plan? Now, we're early in the session. We're only about a quarter of the way through.
There are no hearings. My colleague Andrew Tobias actually asked the governor about this just the other day and said, you said you were going to lead this plan. What's going on with that? And the governor said he has not talked to anyone in the legislature about it. He said they know his position, so this is really their job to pass a resolution, which constitutionally is true, but I think it's more than clear that the governor is not twisting arms and demanding votes on this.
So is he going back on his promise? He said he was going to lead this effort, not leave it to the legislature in that soundbite, Mark.
Yeah, he still has time left in his term to do this. Mike DeWine understands the long view. He's gotten a lot done in government by being somebody who builds coalitions. The legislature is still finding its feet. It really just came into session and started working on the budget, which was the biggest thing. So they will come into the fall session with things other than the budget on their plate.
But safe to say, we're not going to get a new system before we have to draw these maps, Herb.
That's true.
I mean, that's just unrealistic anyway.
That's right.
Because it has to go, the voters have to approve it. Do you think the governor will live up to that promise and try to get? He said the plan that we have now is not working. It's too political.
Yeah, but again, he has to get the legislature and the legislative leadership to agree. And I think the legislative leadership, I don't see any sense yet that there's really an appetite for the Iowa plan. So I think it's sort of dead on arrival, unless, you know, somehow they come to an agreement and they all agree. But I don't think the governor can push the legislature into doing this.
Does it have, kind of by the threat of a new system, the Iowa plan, or the possibility of voters approving that, would it affect this map-making process? Would Republicans be less aggressive? I mean, they could go for cutting Democratic seats by three.
I don't think the legislature's worried much about that. Full disclosure, I was on the strategy team that helped defeat the last attempt to change this process. We were outspent by almost 10 to 1, and the voters turned it down. So now that the voters have had the chance to put in another plan and didn't because it was such a power grab from the left, I don't think the legislature's worried about the voters undoing their work. I think they're going to do what the voters want them to do.
So map making process will pretty much go as it has in the past here.
Yeah, but again, the Republicans have to decide how aggressive do we want to be. They could have a relatively smooth process. I agree that if they don't try to change too much, the Democrats will say, that's fine. We could do a lot worse. So, But I don't know how aggressive they really want to be.
Yeah.
And they're getting pressure from Washington.
It has to be exhausting, too. I mean, having these fights over and over and over again, it's certainly exhausting for us to keep talking about it, you know? Anyway, worries about the future of the planned Intel plant in New Albany have not subsided. Last week, it came out that Intel was slowing construction at its New Albany facility. But a closer look at the company's earnings report shows the company actually says if they don't find new customers for the chips they plan to make there, they will stop construction. Governor DeWine says he has gotten assurances from the new Intel CEO that the company remains committed to Ohio, but the concern is there, and at least one local official, Licking County Commissioner Tim Bubb, says he is disappointed and he feels like Intel is pulling the rug out for them from them a little bit. Mark Weaver, you have worked with the city of New Albany in forming their communication strategy on Intel. You live in Licking County. What's the level of concern out there?
Well, it's changed the way people live in Licking County because property values went up. There's more traffic. There's more growth. A lot of people thought Intel would be here quickly. It now seems as though it's going to take a while. There was a good op-ed in the Dispatch this week from Phil Darrow, one of the columnists, who pointed out that the investment is such in these fabs, as they call them, that it's hard for Intel to walk away. It's unlikely that they would walk away from such a big investment, but it is likely that it's going to take much longer than anybody anticipated.
They've spent about $8 billion on the project so far, according to the financials, but it's going to cost $28 billion. Is $8 billion too much of a sunk cost to walk away if you don't think you can make back that extra 20? Herb, do you think?
I think that's a decision the company will have to make, and it'll be based upon its own financial status. Or are there other buyers out there, other purposes and other companies that might be interested? This is a very frustrating thing because it was exciting. It was nice to have state leaders take the initiative, take some risks to say, we're going to try to, bring Intel. I mean, Intel was exciting. You know, we all had machines that said Intel inside. We recognized the brand and all that. So this is a very frustrating situation.
It was bipartisan, too. Biden was there.
Oh, yeah.
The groundbreaking.
I don't know that anybody could have really anticipated that the financial position of the company was that weak. We thought the product was very good. And the whole notion of, again, national security, building chips here in the United States, building them here in Ohio, really made Ohio the center of a new industry, if you would. And so this is worrisome. And it's hard to imagine that you'd allow $8 billion to go down the drain. But as Mark said, you may not see the benefits of this for a long time, if ever.
Yeah. Jake, publicly, Mike DeWine is still very buoyant on this. We're still committed to Intel. Intel is still committed to Ohio. Is there some behind the scenes more hand-wringing going on at the State House from what you've heard?
Well, when I read about Governor DeWine's optimism, I mean, what else is he supposed to say? That I'm doom and gloom here and I don't think this thing's ever going to take shape? But. Yeah. There is so much state and federal money that has gone toward this project. I mean, I struggle to imagine it all going bust, but God, 2024 to 2030, and now this indefinite further delay that we're hearing from the CEO, it's hard to understand optimism when you look at the facts.
Is there anything else that may, Ohio's already invested a lot of money, the feds have as well. Is there anything else they can do to make sure that this project, at least the two fabs that they're building now, get built, Mark? Is there added incentives for a new buyer, for Intel itself?
Again, Mike DeWine set a marker out there when he was elected to bring economic development to the state. And nationally, as Herb mentioned, we have to decrease the dependence on China for important things like the chips that run all of our devices and other things. And so we talked about Mike DeWine earlier playing the long game on the issue of redistricting. He still has a few years left. I think you will see him take a serious action before he leaves to be able to make sure that this Intel plant comes and stays in Ohio.
Would the state face any resistance, Herb, in offering more money to Intel or a different company?
I think the state would face some resistance. I think there'd be many more questions coming from the legislature. It depends on your optimism. If you think you're throwing money down a sinkhole, then you don't want to spend more money on it. But if you really have a plan that has some degree of assurances, the challenge is we're not experts. I mean, and the legislature is not experts in this. We have good people in Jobs Ohio and elsewhere, but we also don't know what our other country to do. This project lag. Are you going to find other opportunities elsewhere for, in fact, manufacturing chips that are not just in China.
I know Wall Street was not excited about this. Even when it first was announced, the Intel stock went down. There were questions about Gelsinger's, the CEO's, plan at the time. So you had to know, Jobs Ohio had to have known there was some risk involved in this at some point. What does it mean if this does not succeed? Does it hurt Ohio badly in trying to get other companies to come here?
Well, we have other companies. That was all part of this whole image. We've got Amazon, we've got Google, we have Microsoft, we have all these. Now, they're not, they're in largely data centers, which are different kinds of beasts. But so we still are trying to, I think, develop the reputation of being sort of a modern industry in Greater Ohio. But it does hurt because I think this one was the big one. This was the...
Would it be devastating? How bad would it be, Mark?
I don't think so. Central Ohio is in demand. It's a growing part of the state. Employers want to be here. Young people come to Ohio State and they stay and raise their families here. And this land is very well placed. So if Intel doesn't come, and I still think they will, it's just going to take a while, there will be plenty of demand for that site.
We have land, we have water, and we have transportation.
Mm-hmm. We have land, we have water, we have transportation. That should be Ohio's new marketing slogan. My thanks to OSU political scientist Herb Asher, Republican strategist Mark Weaver, and Signal statewide political reporter Jake Zuckerman. We'll be back in a moment.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. And we return to that legislative map making. This week, the award goes to a large group. It includes President Trump for demanding Texas redraw its legislative map only to help Republicans maintain their majority in Congress. It goes to Republican Texas lawmakers ready to try to draw the maps. It also goes to Democrats for fleeing the state to try to prevent this from happening. It also goes to Democratic lawmakers in California and New York who want to redo their state's maps to try to favor Democrats. Voters are supposed to pick their politicians, but these politicians want to pick their voters. For that, they all get our Snollygoster of the Week Award. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. We're part of the NPR network. Try to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Just tell your friends about us. Spread the word. It'll help boost our audience. Our thanks to our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones. For all of them, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.